If I think deep enough into the distance, the whistle will actually come my ear near then. As a child, my mother sang songs to me. You married girls, you're enough to be a dog. I swear to you that there are ghosts in blackface, vaudevillains, today, tossing lines beneath the fractured tent. The child wrote stories on an electric typewriter. Now, although he just broke down in tears for Ellie, knowing with tremor, you can never know, you just don't know a man until you cry. Though I still arrive in the middle of the night, I hope not. You need an activity, boy, like drinking, to break in the evening. Here in Dublin, I wrote 50. No, I destroyed 50 of them. But I forget, it could have been in a cottage, somewhere out west. 15 years, no, 16, before you were even born.
Our next speaker tonight is Lothar Luther.
Right. How many can we do? Okay. 10 years after, this brings us to the 11th of September. Rap got us to June. Here we are. A brand now, trademark. 9/11, a day of desperate pinpricks, propaganda manna from the skies, hyped into high heavens. Future humans will shake their heads at terror like our starving to death of thousands of children each day, like Auschwitz, Hiroshima, Bhopal. Corporate raiders rape the earth, world trade assassins plunder nations. And where are you in all this, God? And where are you, humanity? Let's stop the mumbo jumbo. We need no flights to paradise. We can create one here and now, brand new, and 24/7. Salmon. There through the tides and currents and weirs escapes a silver flash, the salmon's sudden dash. He knows it all. He bears the wisdom, so we were taught, until he's caught. And despite our fascination with his patterns of migration, we gut a dumb, dead fish soon to be served on a dish. And may he be all sagacity filled. We just like him nice and grilled. What counts is he's delicious and so healthily nutritious. And as for his ancient wisdom supreme, we clearly never caught that from him. That gets us a bit into the future, my future maybe. Why bother at 60? In my 20s I went to parties, just in jeans, no underpants. Easy, peeling, service provider, takeaway, ready to ride. In my 40s I still made sure to change into fresh, clean undies, just in case, mostly in vain. Yet, at times, good move after all. Now, when I sniff my armpits, I know that no one will come close enough to be put off. My age and belly will see to this. So, the brown and yellow stains by my so sadly, sadly private parts grow bigger and more pungent. And no one cares but the mortician. Thank you.
Band of Commandos were a work unit of Nazi death camp prisoners composed almost entirely of Jews who were forced and threatened their own death to dispose of the corpses of gas chamber victims during the Holocaust. That was what inspired this poem. I'm going to read it in Irish first this time and then in English. Thunder Commando. Shasin Skunye Mar Shas Mehut and Ruik Fion Rua Down Dov Dahana Didoga Mar Vafor Suya Kno Kapil Katishil Plum Huda Driother Drosan Diloga the Raw Fod the Karna the Do Beginna Knall. Sonderkommando. As the children file into the chamber, their hair reflects the colours of dying autumnal leaves. Fair, russet, brown, black. Eyes like chestnuts. Dull, downcast. Decaying detritus. Dead leaves to be raked, piled, burned. Piled fire, bone fire. Thank you, Julie. Dream. I hear the call to unhusk my tongue, a forked satin ribbon leading me along the kaleidoscopic byway, where every gnarled tree is ringing in garlands of night-like feathers, recalling to me your feathered boa, your sprayed little beehive, your hands sheathed pearls that glint as you sway in the light in the eye of my room, sour nuggets drooping to your feet. These apples of Sodom, your newborn babes, I endow with names, craven soul Apollyon, fallen lighted leaf. Thank, daughter, you deprive of warmth, the forgotten Oblivia, the bountiless meat, our empty nicks, and then, last of all taboo, the way whose love is always forbidden. I wish to drown them within ungreen rivers, but they burst in my hand in acrid puffs of ash. Thank you.
And now we have the wonderful Mary O'Connell.
Thanks, Julie. This is called The End of NQOCD. Abbreviation mania is favoured by our youth. When texting or emailing, you need to be a sleuth if you wish to decipher those cryptic little codes. BRB is be right back, but I could give you loads. I've come across some others to suit the more mature. BTW, bring the wheelchair. INC, I need a cure. WAIT does not refer to waiting. It's just a bothered elder asking, who am I texting? ATD at the doctor's may appear somewhat staid, but INTGL means I need to get laid. MGTKI, must go, tablets kicking in. If I give you any more, some people might begin to tell that I am ageist. But it's just a bit of fun. If I didn't have my bus pass, you'd have me on the run.
And it's going to be hard to follow that now, so Paddy Doyle, let's go.
It's a pleasant holiday for Dino. And in fact there are many of us who remember and all that. The wind is gently sighing high up on the dune, where the long green grasses dance to the south same tune. All the young lovers walking hand in hand, these interweaving footsteps along the shimmering strand. The sound of children laughing I hear from years before, when I was but a child myself, playing along the shore. And for a moment I remember that endless summer's day with the waves making music in the mountain mirrored bay.
And Patricia Walsh, thank you. This is my attempted love poem. It's called Requiem for an Infatuation. The kiss you gave me tastes sweet. and location is sweeter than all circumstance will unfold. I know you in a coffee shop at the student center, where you fixed me with a summer blue gaze. However, the messenger will falter, and I will never see you again. What harm then? I can fantasize, no end about what dreams may come. I hold them for the time being. Your expected kiss tastes gentle, loving, and will rage inside of me for the while to come.
I just have to say at the outset, Robert said I ran there just to correct him in relation to our seal. I was the safety rep in our seal at the time of the assignment the pellets were there, and let you know that I tried to close the plant down at the time in 1990, but the company wouldn't do so, and they stored all those pellets inside where the crematorium is out, let you know that, okay? Now, this is a poem that I wrote in regarding my time in Irish Steel, okay? I worked in Irish Steel for 22 years, and to see it demolished, I shed a few tears. I remember the arc furnace melting the scrap with its power, tapping the 90 ton of steel every 2 hours. To see it tilt forward and pour into the ladle, a crane then hoist it up on the casting cradle. The hydraulics are opened, are operated, the slide gate opens, liquid steel fills the tundish, and the casting commences. Three strands are formed inside the moulds, drawn down to the gas torches and cut into lengths. They now are billets, rolled down onto a bay, removed when they're cooled from the crane overhead. They are taken by crane, if it's a continuous cast, to the reheat furnace and heated up fast. They go through the mill for the final process, lengthened and shaped into end products. Irish Steel, alas, is now gone, but in memory, it now still lives on. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we're going to have something kind of nice between Wei and Paul Casey. Wei is the writer in residence at the Munster Literature Centre. She's from all the way from Shanghai, and she recently translated a poem that Paul, which Paul had written in English, she's translated it into Mandarin. Mandarin, so they're going to read that one.
Thanks, Julie. Glad I've had a chance to explain all that.
Oh,
thank you, Wei. I'm dying to hear what this sounds like in Chinese. Exile. My mother is taking me to Africa. She takes me from the arms of her Irish mother, the reach of her great great grandmothers. I breathe in the womb of Africa and smile with African children, see their eyes reach through mine to meet all my grandmothers. Thanks.
去往非洲的路途，他将我抱过来，从他的爱尔兰母亲的背弯中抱起，带我离开他一代又一代的祖母。现在我在非洲的子宫中呼吸，和非洲的婴孩一起微笑，看了他们的目光穿越了我的视线，与我所有的祖母相遇。
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. And now we continue with Rachel O'Sullivan, please.
She's the apt follow there. You made me stop and think, beggar. For that I should thank thee. For the hopeless feelings you invoked, beggar, I would stop and talk to thee. Make room beside on pavement, beggar, in case I should join thee. Be sure our thoughts have passed, beggar, though I did not talk to thee. The cuts I noticed on face, beggar, do belong to thee.
where bed and bone lack deep beggar, have come your face to be. A hat you wear with deep beggar, have not yet left to break. A hat no man should wear beggar in polite society. I saw blue eyes in a face beggar, not look at me. Could I thought to pass beggar, but I did not speak to thee.
This is called Midnight in Hatsu. It's kind of could be any random night in Cork reading. The transition from pub to home is quite startling. Never a club, for I don't go in for that. The hustle and bustle of the crane or the grove can often be deafened by the silence of the journey home. Or drowned out by the irritable taxi driver, forever unhappy with his lot. Even in the good times, he could not appreciate the generosity of his customers. He sees only black and white, particularly black. I step into the twilight of the porch lamp, the ferryman's toll paid in full. Dynamic different depending on the occasion. Key turns in a freshly oiled lock, hurriedly or resignedly. This doorway leads to a different place. There are no unruly drunks to deal with, or melancholy has-beens, who know only the past and are forsaken the future. Alone or together as a head to bed, a scenario ruled by bliss or solitude. One where pints are not spilled, but maybe watered. I am bouncer of my own domain, and closing time is when I call it. Lights do not tend to flicker here, rather they dim at command. Surrender into a den of iniquity, a temporary retreat, a permanent oasis. Thanks.
Tonight and 7 days evening. It's called the intimacies. If the intimacies that will kill you, the little moments, the unseen, the little bits that can change, make, erode, or shape. Whiting, the natural yogurt, the honey on whole grain toast. There never is a grand finale, he said to me. A great stage whereon your ultimate destruction will be played out. I lit the smoke that I'd given him and straightened up and went. Likewise, I thought, that moment where I will win everything that I've ever dreamt of in front of the ones that are meant to be here, every day, still, or not. The lost lovers and friends, the lovers whose very hands told me that we were meant to be, but I disregarded that. The friends that I said that I didn't deserve and then lost. Moments matter, I thought, more than most. The girl at a till in the afternoon allows that till to slide to her navel and waits, like St. Peter pausing or a prince considering before a kiss upon the lips of a beauty sleeping. Or any other fairy tale where everything that was, is, or ever will be hangs in the balance. Hung over and waiting, having wagered everything upon her, smiling back my faith in whatever wavered. A wager that I made without meaning to. Until the wheel had spun and the money was down upon her palm and I was left stood there, wondering if I would make it. If the intimacy is that will kill you. The little moments, the unseen, the little bits that can change, make, erode, or shape. The moments that haul back a coastline, like a coat on a shoulder. The invisible bits that make change and ground down rock or man. That work away generation after generation after generation, underneath unseen. Under tide after tide after tide after tide. And though a great wave longs to take credit, he and the coast know something, have learned something over time. It is the intimacies that will kill you, the little moments, the unseen, the little bits that can change, make, erode, or shape. I walked in and watched. Eat what you can, he said, and she did, but it wasn't much. When I was a kid, my dad found a fallen robin, and he brought it back to the house, and he nursed it in front of us. He took tepid water at times and brought it to the beak. Other times he diluted honey in that water and stirred it in a soup spoon at the other end of a match and then brought that to the beak. And we stood there, my two sisters and I, below, mouths open, speechless with wonder and awe. The robin moved in a way that I had never seen something so free move. Helplessly, dependently, weak yet aware. The tiny bird trembled in my father's great palm and twitched a little, and we watched her and hoped, afraid that we might gasp. If the intimacies that will kill you as slowly as the sea, if the intimacies that will kill you or else will set you free.
Thanks, Judy. There's a short story. It's called Mrs. McKeown and Jesse James. That day, Mrs. McKeown sat us all into the table and then put out plates and glasses and offered us a choice of porridge sandwiches or milk and biscuits. We all went with the milk and biscuits. At first it seemed to me like we were settling in and we weren't going to see any gun. That's what we came for, to see this gun that Joe was on about. I don't know how he knew about it, but he did. And then she bustled around pouring the milk and asking who I was. And she knew more about me than I knew myself, and I had never seen the woman before in my life. And she talked about the captain and my mother, and when they went to dances on bicycles. I couldn't say much because I'd never seen her before. I couldn't talk with my mouth full of thick arrows. I was never even in her house before, and here I was, quick as a flash, sitting up at her table, drinking her milk and eating her biscuits. Joe Malloy didn't have a problem with that at all. They even asked her for more biscuits. I suspected Joe and Malloy came here all the time when they wanted biscuits. It was a low cottage in among trees and overgrown bushes, and it was like a secret hideaway, except when you got there was someone there to give you biscuits and milk. And I thought we could come back every day. But I didn't come to eat thick arrows. I came to see the gun she had under the bed. I was on my third thick arrow and halfway down the glass of milk when Joe asked Mrs. McKeown, would she show us the gun, that I wanted to see it. That embarrassed me because that wasn't true. Well, I did want to see it, but I didn't know anything about the gun until Joe Malloy started up about it. I think they wanted to see it more than me. They said her son or brother or something was a cowboy in America, and it was his gun she had under the bed. And I thought she came to see me, she said, and laughed. I thought we should visit again just to see her, because she was probably lonely. After a moment, she said, well, I suppose I'd better get this thing, or I'll never get rid of you. You'll have me yet out of house and home. As soon as she was gone up to the top room, Joe and Malloy both reached for the biscuits at the same time and took one each. I couldn't wait to see the gun. Joe poured us out more milk like he owned the place. We heard something sliding on the floor. That's the suitcase, Joe whispered. She keeps it under the bed. And then two loud ticks as she opened the catches. I recognised the sound from a big red trunk we kept blankets in at home. And then I heard her footsteps as she walked back across the floor. And then she appeared in the doorway. She had it. I saw it. A bundle wrapped in white cloth held in her two hands close to her stomach. And she came into the kitchen, left it on the table in front of us and opened out the cloth. And it was the real McCoy, a black six-shooter and brown leather holster with bullets and all, just like the cowboys would wear. Joe had been right, it was the very same thing you'd see in a western. Can we touch it, Mrs. McKeown? Joe said. You can touch it, but we can't take it out, she replied. And we each took a turn at touching it, the hand was cold, the smooth, shiny brown leather holster. And it was heavy, heavier than I'd imagined it would be. I was more interested in touching the smooth leather than the gun. The gun was cold, but the leather just wanted to be touched. The smell of the leather reminded me of my new school bag and boxing gloves. Did it ever shoot anyone, Mrs. McKeown? Joe asked. No, I don't think so. That didn't impress us much. I knew I could tell her if it had been fired or not. I came the captain shotgun, and I knew what it looked like down the barrel when it had been fired. Whose was it, Mrs. McKeown? It was my brother's. Was he a cowboy, Mrs. McKeown? He was, I suppose. A real cowboy, Mrs. McKeown. I suppose he was a real one. Out west. Did he have a horse? He did. Had a horse. Out west. Then, after a pause, and we all had a turn touching the gun again. But Jesse James. Did he rob banks? I don't think he robbed any banks. He robbed trains, I bet. No, I don't think he robbed any trains. I think he was with Jesse James for a while, but he didn't like him much. Why not, Mrs. McKeown? Why didn't he like Jesse James? Well, I suppose Jesse James was always shooting people. But that's what guns are for, Mr. McKeown. He are, I suppose. Did he have his own gang? Was it the McKeown gang? He might have called it the McKeown gang, all right. But he didn't shoot anybody, Mr. McKeown. No, he didn't shoot anybody. How about engines, Mr. McJones? He had to have shot engines. Everybody out west had to shoot engines. He had to shoot engines. Well, he might have shot one or two of those, I suppose. But only if he had to. I knew what Joe said. He shot engines. And he put his hand over his head and pretended to fire a few shots into the ceiling. Pew, pew. Does he come home, Mrs. McKeown? No, no. No, she said, sort of smiling. He doesn't come home. And I caught her glance out the window. No, she said, wrapping the gun back up on its white jaw and pulling the bundle into her stomach and turning and shuffling back up to the room. He doesn't come home. We see you, Mrs. McKeown. Malloy called out, grabbing another biscuit and headed out the door and beckoned us to follow. Are ye off? I heard her call from the tap room. Bye, bye. And we ran out into the bright light, blazing away and running from side to side, taking cover behind trees and gate pillars, anything that would shield us from the hail of bullets coming up the lane. By the time we got to the road, the McKeown gang was in a shootout with the Jesse James gang. Thank you.